Hi everyone. Welcome to this special series for Proud to be GIM Week, brought by the DI Shift podcast, the American College of Physicians, and the Society of General Internal Medicine. This series is sponsored by Proud to be GIM grant from the Society of General Internal Medicine and feature the voices from guests in ACP chapter throughout the country. In this series, we will revisit important topics from our first and second season that highlights our values and why we are proud to be general internal medicine. It's a real pleasure to have Dr. Priya Radhakrishnan, who is the Vice President for Academic Affairs and Health Equity, the governor for the Arizona chapter of the ACP, and the governor-elect designee for the Board of Governors of the ACP National. She has been a mentor, a person that I can trust, and I can always ask questions, and I'm really proud to share this topic with her. Today, we're going to talk about minority tax. In our episode, in our season two, episode one, there was a very good conversation about this topic. One, I would like to start defining what is minority tax. It's the burden that is acquired or put into the minority groups. And this can lead to multiple things, including burnout. So I want to start this conversation right now asking Priya about what is your view of minority tax? And if you can give me some examples on how in your life this has affected you and how you have overcome this.
Thanks, Ricardo, and really appreciate it. It's really an honor to be speaking with you on this important topic. You know, I think minority tax is a major source of inequity in medicine, and particularly the physicians who belong to underrepresented minority groups, whether it's Black, women, Latinx, LGBTQ, Native American, API, they're all asked to design and develop programs so that there are more underrepresented minorities in medicine. If you have 60% administrative time, then I think that's a great thing to do. But the reality is majority of the people who are being asked to do develop programs are actually clinician educators. And, early in my career, particularly, I was really interested in these topics. And so it's that balance between, you really want to do it because you know it's important. And the next step is you have to do it because your chair or your mentor asked you to do it. And you do it out of gratitude because you feel that, I should not be here. And getting a seat at the table is amazing. And, the things that can follow for people like me later on. But over time, it's cumulative. You know, I have a great story when I was early in my career, when we started talking about burnout, and I remember at a previous employer, they started hosting sessions for burnout for particularly women, because women physicians are a group that had a high burnout rate. And the meetings were either at 7 a.m. or at 6 p.m. And for a person who is married and had a young child, you can imagine the stress that you have. Now, not only do you have to figure out who's going to take your kid to school, but you have to come early to attend this meeting, supposedly to improve my burnout. And so, I think that's an example of how the world works. And I think we can do better in medicine.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And I feel identified also with some of the stories that you tell. It's that in my case also, I was interested in this topic. And then you arrive to a place and they assume that because you are different, because you are not the common white Caucasian, you have to get all of this. So I start getting all of the jobs for things that probably I was not so interested, and I was more interested in other things. At the beginning of my career, I was more interested in doing research and doing research in these areas, specific areas. But then I started getting the ask, oh, why you don't go to this committee, and then another committee, and then another committee. And then when you are a junior faculty, it's very difficult to say no, because you're afraid to say no. And I think that is a burden that is imposed on everybody, but more on, you know, on the represented minorities, because saying no for us means like you cannot do it. You have the imposter syndrome that you are not good enough, so you need to do more. So I think that this is so interesting, and in understanding your part that you have to say late or early, and this is life, and you have to balance work and life, and even this is to decrease your burnout. It was something that you can consider as a work. So thank you for sharing that. Now let's go a little bit about how this minority tax affect academic careers, because we know and we see that yes, there is in gender more medical students that are women than males. We see sometimes in residencies, but when we start going the ladder, we have less chairs that are women. We have less deans that are from underrepresented minorities. As per the last AAMC, only 18 are Black African Americans, and probably the Latinx are located in Puerto Rico. So we see this that is not translated, and this group of people probably, because they were so burdened of having this minority tax, leave the academic pathway.
No, you're absolutely right. And, you know, I'd like to refer our listeners to a really beautiful commentary in Academic Medicine, and the authors were Campbell and Rodriguez, and they really broke it down. You know, so we described the gratitude tax and the imposter syndrome, you know, so we do all these things. But ultimately, if you are in a tenure track or in an academic medical center, do you get credit for the work that you're doing? And I think that's a really important question for both leaders as well as junior faculty to really ask and have an open and honest conversation. So, you know, I was chair of medicine many, many moons ago, and as we developed, you know, incentive programs, one of the things that was important were you part of committees that were doing great work? And if the answer is if you're part of five committees, but you didn't hit your RVU clinical target, you still got incentivized because you were doing work on behalf of the department. And I think that's a really important part for chairs to promote and make sure that that happens. The second part is, majority of academic institutions, particularly those in tenure track, but also non-tenure, give a lot of weightage on clinical trials and what they consider real world research. DEI research, serving on committees, really building curricula are as important. And majority of folks who are women or underrepresented minorities actually are in clinical educator tracks. And it's really important for us to acknowledge that this is a different type of research, whether it's community-based participatory research, sociological research, and that should contribute to either tenure or incentives based on whether you're in a traditional university setting or you're in a center like ours, which is a community-based academic health center.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. And totally agree. And this special episode of the DHF, it's very focused on general internal medicine. And I am very proud that you mentioned when you were chair of medicine, how you were making that change. And I think that we need more and more people that want to achieve that goal of making the change, of finding a way where the promotion in academic medicine is not just reliable on the impact factor of the journal, but it's reliable in everything else that you do in the rest of your career. And I know that we have certain conversations in the Society of General Internal Medicine to see how valuable is publications that we do in the forum compared to that are not strict or strict rigorous scientific methodology, but really are impactful and helps others. So I think that that's very important. So going back again to to internal medicine. What are the things that you consider that the internal medicine community should be doing to make the needle change more? I know that we have been working, academic center have been working, but what do you think internal medicine should focus to change that needle and appreciate more, valorate more what people are doing, that is the passion that they have, and they grow in and nurture them to grow in academic medicine?
You know, it was interesting that you brought up Forum. Full disclosure, I used to be Forum editor many, many moons ago. And really, you know, Forum is a great example of an opportunity where if you're actually part of developing a DEI project, a pilot, a program, that, you know, you measure outcomes before and after and really talk about the program. It's such a wonderful place to publish. But also, you and I are part of the ACGME Equity Matters Fellowship. And, you know, as we learned, there's a lot of other forums. So, you know, blogs, really sharing this work as part of sort of invited commentaries. I think it's important for generalists, particularly, to have a laser focus on getting double the bang for your buck. I really believe that. So, you know, if you are part of a committee that's really looking at improving certain outcomes, such as the number of medical school applicants who are accepted who fall under the URM category, then talk about it, write about it. And that's an area where we actually don't do a lot. We are so, you know, on our hamster wheel, trying to finish our notes, that we do not set up some time to really think about writing about some of the work that we're doing. And I'd really put a plug for doing that, you know, whether it's at SGIM, ACP, the regional meetings, local meetings, you know, there's so many opportunities, and really putting a scholarship lens on the work that we are doing can get us to really continue the passion, you know, because I'm very passionate about social determinants of health and, you know, DEI. And really getting that acknowledgement for the work that you're doing. And then finally, promotion, if that is your end goal, or recognition as an expert in your community.
And I think that something that you mentioned is that, because at the beginning, I know that I focus in academic medicine, but not just academic medicine, but working in a hospital setting where everything is based on RBUs and where everything is based on how much money do you make seeing patients, and nobody cares about the other part, all the other helps that you are doing to the community, that many of us doing volunteer work because we are passionate about that, but there should be a way of recognition, probably decreasing the time in the amount of patients that you are seeing or your clinics that you have, because that is a impact that healthcare system is doing to the community. So you always represent that healthcare system. So I know that there is many initiative in the healthcare system that you are right now, and you are making a big change in Phoenix. And I'm so proud to be here and to be a part of the Phoenix area where you are. So can you tell us a little bit more of some of the changes that you are making in the area?
So I think, you know, it's been wonderful. At Honor Health, we actually developed a DEI collaborative where we have folks from all walks of life within our institution, you know, nursing colleagues, pharmacy, marketing, human resources. And one of the things that we have launched are what are called people resource groups, which also are called affinity groups. And the goals of these groups are really to promote advocacy, advancement, and education. And, you know, we have three groups that we've launched. One is Hispanic Latinx, the second is veterans, and the third is women physician leadership, because three really important areas. And we are using rapid cycle PDSA methods to really figure out, because this is all new work. And so we want to measure it and see what works well. And, you know, our partners are like cafeteria, because we want to include food. Food is always a great way of celebrating different cultures. But also, you know, working on pipeline programs. So, for example, I have a student who didn't do that well in undergrad, but wants to be a physician. And so providing them an opportunity to do research with us and mentoring the students so that they can actually have a very competitive entry into medical school. So those are some examples where we're partnering with community colleges, community health worker programs. I can keep talking, but I don't want to take up all the time. As you know, both you and I love this area, so we can keep talking for hours.
Yeah, no, thank you. Because I being here in Phoenix, I have realized how much impact you and your group has made in the community. And I think that's what we are achieving. And what we are looking is that more internal medicine doctors get interest on this, that they let out the imposter syndrome and think about that they can make changes. And sometimes I believe that as a human being, we come to this world to make changes. We don't have to get the Nobel Prize to make changes. We can make our own changes in our own communities. So I think that it's very interesting things that are happening. I hope that 50 years from now, things will be different. I hope that this minority tax word will disappear from our vocabulary, and that we will be in a better place. So really, I thank you so much, Priya, for having the time here and spending and talking about sometimes this topic that is not so easy. Experience that we have had, it's make this topic a little bit more complicated. Some of us are afraid of talking because always fear of retaliation from others. But it's very important that what we're doing here, just talking about it and sharing our experience. Really, I thank everybody for joining us today in this episode. The conversation continues on Twitter with the hashtag ProudToBeGIM and at The Day Shift. We'd love to see you there as you share why are you proud to be a general internal medicine. Thank you so much and see you soon.
Thank you. It was really a wonderful opportunity.
The Day Shift podcast and its guests provide general information and entertainment, but not medical advice. Before making any changes to your medical treatment or execution of your treatment plan, please consult with your doctor or personal medical team. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by The Day Shift. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the podcast does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. Views and opinions expressed by the Day Shift team are those of each individual and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Day Shift team and its guests, employers, sponsors, or organizations we are affiliated with. The Day Shift podcast is proudly sponsored by the American College of Physicians Southern California Region 3 chapter. Our theme music is brought to you by Chris Dingman. Learn more at www.chrisdingman.com.